infamy. I mean, come on. Is that us being working together or something? What is going on here?
No,
I'm all
idea.
Confused and discombobulated.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Hi there, and welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's a beautiful Monday morning, July 31st, 2017. I am Eric. That is Tristan. It's a day that could live in infamy, as it's the trade deadline and some big names could be on the move. But we got the big names here. Hello, Tristan. How are you? It's been a while.
Infamy. I mean, come on. Is that us being working together or something? What is going on here?
No
I'm all
idea.
Confused and discombobulated.
You're excited, Tristan, right?
Sing a song. That's producer Mike Rabier. He pushes all the right buttons, and researcher Kyle Soppy is here and will remain here as well on this show as well.
We chained him to a chair.
So this show records before noon, so there will be trades finalized after our show ends and before the trade deadline, perhaps Yu Darvish or Sonny Gray or someone we haven't even thought about. And we will cover that on our next show, I suppose, which is, Kyle, when is our next show, Kyle?
Thursday. So I'll be taking questions Wednesday night. We'll be back Thursday to break down what happened between now and then, trade deadline, all that good stuff, and a weekend preview.
There we go. No breakdowns here. This is The Buzz. All right, we'll get to the trades, although there's really not a whole lot affecting fantasy owners yet, I would say, but we'll get to that in a second. I want to start with something happy, Adrian Beltre. Let's start with that. 3,000 hits, future Hall of Famer, incredible third baseman for a really long time. And Tristan, he's a guy who's actually aged pretty well. So, you know, we'll get to the injuries and the trades and the disappointing players and all that, but I wanted to start with something happy because that is your middle name. Adrian Beltre is still playing like a top five third baseman, right?
No. But,
okay. There you go. Thank you for...
But third base has a lot of very good players, so it's no knock on Adrian Beltre. He is great. Top 10? Okay. Absolutely. He's been very good. Look at his seasonal rates.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
He was drafted as the number five third baseman. He's currently number 35 on the player radar, but that's not fair. He missed like 2 months of the season. So where would you say Beltre should be drafted next year? Because there's nothing changed right now with his batting average, his plate discipline, his power looks fine. You can say he's going to be 39 next year, and there's more likelihood he'll miss games than a normal guy who's 25. I'll give you that. But if he was the number five third baseman in ADP this year, where does he go next year? Number 10?
Probably that. I'm going to have to get an angle on the qualifiers here, the multi-position ones. Ramirez probably has enough games there to stay at third. Carpenter probably won't retain third base. But, I mean, the main reason why I can't just jump at the top five is, as you threw there, Eric, it's not a criticism of Beltre. It's just that we've got guys like Rendon, Moustakas make compelling cases up against him, Evan Longoria. I think he's probably going to be that 8, 9, 10. Maybe a numbers game bounces him to 11 or 12. But this still could be a first 12 rounds player, maybe even first 10 rounds.
And as I always say, older players can still help fantasy owners. They're not. See, like, he's not as exciting to draft and own as, say, like a Nicholas Castellano of Detroit, who we've been waiting a couple years now to emerge. But he's better. He's still better than a guy like that, yes?
Yes. Yes, he is.
That's all I wanted to say.
But the question is he better than a guy like Rafael Devers? Those are going to be...
You would really draft Devers
over
him? No,
but it's July 31st. We have 2 months. Devers could be, Gary Sanchez like awesome the rest of the year, or he could be nothing. We don't know. During the offseason, that could end up being a debate there. I could see that being in the realm of possibility.
All right, so moving on from Beltre, let's get to some of the trades that happened over, I guess, since the last show. On Sunday night, Jonathan LaCroix was dealt from the Texas Rangers to the Colorado Rockies, and you and I had kind of different takes here on Twitter. So you first, your thoughts here on LaCroix actually giving some fantasy value. He was drafted as a number two catcher or number three catcher in most ESPN leagues. He's currently outside the top 30. You think that's going to change greatly?
Greatly, no.
You said he was going to be a top 10 catcher. That would change greatly.
Well, no, not necessarily. If it's a top 10 catcher the rest of the year, he might get to only 22, 23 in the player rater. So is that greatly? I don't know. We can sit here and nitpick the terminology if we want. My big issue I have with Lucroy is that it's a great situation for him, obviously, and I don't think people are even getting into why it's so good for him. He is a contact type who hits line drives. That's always been his game. But this year, he hasn't quite been that player. He's got the contact, but his ground ball rate has soared to 56%. That's 14% higher than his career rate. He's got to improve that in order to capitalize here. That's why I can't put him greater than, say, 9-10.
LaCroix is currently, as we said, not even a top 30 catcher, yet he is owned in 76.4% of ESPN standard leagues, which makes him the number 8 catcher in ownership, which tells me that people either aren't paying attention or they've been waiting all season for a turnaround. So if you already own LaCroix, I would tell you, I guess, keep owning him because it should improve in Colorado. He looks shot. Most of them, I mean, I'll give you the contact rates, but he's not hitting for power. He's not driving the ball. Nothing's coming off hard off his bat. There looks like there's nothing here. Can you make the case you'd rather own the guy he left behind in Texas, Robinson Chirinos, over LaCroix?
I can absolutely make that case, and I wanted to yesterday. And the closer I looked at it, I realized that LaCroix's track record should earn him a little bit more leeway here. But Chirinos really does deserve more attention than I think people are giving him. He's got a lot better pop than people give him credit. And he, I mean, Eric, as you pointed out here, he's outperformed LaCroix as a backup. So I think he could be a top 15 catcher. That means a solid number two option for mixed.
Okay. Moving on to the next trade here. The Cubs pick up Alex Avila from the Tigers and Justin Wilson, who was their closer. Not getting a ton of save opportunities. Now he won't get any in Chicago, we presume. I mean, obviously, they've got a pretty good closer there. So most people, Joe Jimenez was promoted from AAA Toledo today. I think Shane Green's the closer there. My question to you is, does this matter? There's 2 months left in the season. This is not a team that wins all that much. They score runs. So they're like the worst kind of team to own a closer in. When they win 7-2. They don't win a whole lot of close games, which is why Wilson wasn't getting a lot of saves. Green, Jimenez, or don't bother?
I would say Green gets the slight edge over don't bother. I'd say Jimenez is going to warrant watching here because he did pitch very well in AAA Tacoma. As a matter of fact, 16 straight scoreless appearances at the time of promotion. But Shane Green's the one who's been pitching great. In July, 13 games, hasn't given up an earned run, as a 27% K rate. My initial read on this after the trade was, ugh, here we go. Bruce Rondon's going to get the Rex Brothers treatment where, oh, he's the closer and he's going to be great. Let's all go get him and I will pass. And then I looked closer and I saw that Green, I think Green is worth a pickup. Maybe not in the ESPN 10 team standard, but anything deeper.
I don't know why anybody would presume it's Rondon. I mean, it seems pretty obvious it's Shane Green to me, but, you know, by our next show, it could be somebody we haven't even talked
about
yet.
People like hard throwers. They just assume that's who's going to get the job. I bet there are people who think Jimenez is closing the next game for them.
I don't think that's going to happen, but, you know, they could move Shane Green too. Alex Avila actually has been a top 10 catcher this season. He won't be with Chicago because they obviously have a pretty good one in Wilson Contreras. James McCann will catch for the Tigers. That's no big deal in fantasy. What else? Melky Cabrera switches teams in the same division. He's now in the Royals. I want to see where he bats in the lineup. I mean, he could be their leadoff hitter, in theory, but he's barely a top 50 outfielder for the season. I don't think anything major changes here. And the White
Except
Sox have nobody coming in.
Where does he play is the one question.
Well, that's the but even if, like, Alex Gordon is still, I think, still defensively proficient, right? I mean, there's
yes.
No reason. So I guess Brandon Moss loses playing time. I don't know. I mean,
yeah, it's the DH part of this equation that I can't quite get wrap my head around. I mean, Jorge Bonifacio has put up some decent numbers this year. I don't think that he should go immediately to the bench. So I do think there's going to be some mixing and matching, and I'm with you that Moss probably loses out the most.
So Cabrera might lose some value here. Who's having a okay year.
As a matter of fact, it's not a good ballpark for him to go to in terms of power. That's a downgrade.
It's really not a good ballpark for him to defend in, right? I mean, he's not a good defensive outfielder.
DH!
But we mock. Addison Reed in breaking news is going to Boston, which means if you own Addison Reed, you can drop him now because he will not be closing there. But it's an interesting situation for the Mets, who last week traded for A.J. Ramos from Miami. There are rumors that Yuris Familia could be back in a matter of weeks or even sooner. I would assume Ramos is the closer. So if you dropped him last week after his trade, go pick him back up. But again, not a lot of save opportunities there. Not having a great season. They're in Coors this week. Would you rather own A.J. Ramos or Shane Green? And knowing that Familia is going to get the job back as soon as he comes. Now, why the Mets would even bring him back makes no sense to me. They're not a playoff team. I think they know that by now. They're selling. So why push a guy who, that was a pretty serious thing that happened to Familia. I don't understand this at all. They should just not let him come back.
But. Probably just get him some reps, if anything. I'd lean to Ramos here. I'm not excited in saying it. I think that the Mets kind of looked at 2018 here as much as they did this year. They wanted to get another guy who would either battle Familia or set him up next season. So I think that had an awful lot to do with the trade. But I think Ramos at least gets a good month's worth of save chances. Green isn't absolutely guaranteed. As we mentioned, Jimenez. I mean, if Jimenez is lights out for 2 weeks, then he could begin cutting into the save chances. They do have some other options and could go committee. I think Ramos is pretty clearly the guy.
Now, it seems to me that most times at the trade deadline, we're end up talking about closers. Closers that lose their jobs because they're traded to a team that has a better one, and guys who get opportunities. But it's no guarantee that these guys keep the jobs or are in the right situations. Anyway, look for more trades later today. Games have already started for the week. By the time you're listening to this show, the Phillies and the Braves playing a noon game, which I'm sure will be well attended. And so just the one thing, piece of advice I could give people in advance, like if Darvish gets traded or Sonny Gray, I mean, unless it's cross league, there's not a whole lot that matters here. We want to see what ballpark they're in, of course, but Darvish was pitching really well until lately in Texas. I'm sure he can do fine
anywhere. Can't believe you missed the three most exciting trades to you and I, though.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Our teams were involved in trades. I know. I kid. Jaime Garcia should not get cast aside totally.
Jaime Garcia should get cast aside totally. Why is he interesting to you? He's a top 60 starting pitcher to you? He's relevant in ESPN Standard Leagues?
No, but... We need to speak to the people who are in a little bit deeper leagues than that, and I think Jaime Garcia could end up giving a couple of good outings here. I mean, if he gives you another 10 starts or so, don't you think maybe 5 or 6 would be worthwhile?
Yeah, the problem is he's not all that good. Now, Yankee Stadium may be the right place for him because of the right field porch there and avoiding home runs, but, I mean, we weren't excited about him with the Braves. We weren't excited when we found out he was traded to the Twins. What's the difference now? Better outfield defense? Not really. Better run support? You know, Aaron Judge hasn't hit at all in the last couple of weeks. Jaime Garcia is just not all that good. So
I'm not about to cast him into the not all that good bin. I think I'll
take him over Jeremy Hellickson, but I mean,
But Hellickson's not going to get used, I think, even for streaming. It's going to be really difficult to pick out his good matchups. I think in Garcia's case, when he's been healthy, when he's been on, he has been pretty obvious in terms of the good matchups.
Last piece of advice on the trades, and we'll obviously hit more on this on Thursday, I think, but pick up Ahmed Rosario. If the Mets don't move Astrubal Cabrera today, I don't know what they're doing. Just give him away. Ahmed Rosario probably gets the call, and I think we'll be talking about him on Thursday's show, but I could be wrong.
And Dom Smith possibly could get
Dominic
called
up. Dominic Smith could be their first baseman. I think they're going to stick with Wilmer Flores there, but mm-hmm.
But in time they could.
In time they could, and then watch for the other teams that are trying to just dump their players because they're like the White Sox don't have anybody to really call up offensively. They could call up some pitchers, but Phillies. I mean, I guess we could see Rhys Hoskins. I can't imagine Tommy Joseph gets moved, but you never know. By the way, our new presenting sponsor is ZipRecruiter, and with ZipRecruiter you can post your job to 100 plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. In fact, more than 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. And right now, you can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/06010. Let's move on now, Tristan. Talk about a couple injuries that mattered from the weekend. It was kind of a bad weekend for that. And I would argue that it was even more relevant for fantasy purposes than almost any of these trades. I mean, yes, Shane Green, awesome, but Robbie Ray getting hit in the head by a line drive will miss at least 2 starts, could miss a lot more. I don't know, but Robbie Ray and David Price both hitting the DL, different reasons here, and I would say different timetables here as well.
Yeah, the Robbie Ray one is going to be a little uncertain just because of the nature of concussions. Hopefully it's just the 2 starts because he's been great in fantasy this year. I had him as a top 15 fantasy starter, so I'm keeping my fingers crossed he comes back and gives us good productive numbers. The Price thing...
I mean, we can't be surprised by this, right?
No, I mean, this is the kind of thing we were cautioning about in the preseason, and absolutely nothing has changed over the course of the year. It's just you did squeeze some somewhat useful starts out of him during his healthy period. But I feel pessimistic about him contributing anything meaningful for fantasy the rest of the year. How about you?
He's starting to get dropped in ESPN leagues, and I agree. And, like, by the way, folks, keep all this off-the-field nonsense separate from this. Whether you like him or don't like him, should have no bearing whatsoever here on David Price's ownership in a fantasy league. I didn't really want to own him before the season because of this elbow injury, and he did pitch beyond my expectations for the past, I don't know, 2 months. But see, the thing about the Red Sox is they're out of first, or they're, you know, whatever. They're in a really tough race here. And Doug Fister, who's really bad, is scheduled to start tonight's game. And he's been just consistently terrible. So unless Boston trades for a starting pitcher today, I think they're going to rush Price back. He was pitching through pain probably all season long. So, you know, I don't want to say to people, just drop Price, he's not coming back, because he could be back in 2 weeks. I really believe he might be back in 2 weeks, but still compromised to some degree.
Right. It's what does he contribute in those games he gives you and how many of them are there. I think anything beyond five is going to be considered gravy. Look, I'd love to see the guy come back and be what he was the past, what was it, 8 years, I guess, at this point? Actually, seven full elite fantasy years. I'd love to see that happen, but I feel like it's five starts of a four ERA.
And there are starting pitchers out there if you need help. Zach Davies, three consecutive really nice starts. Kevin Gausman. What do you make of Kevin Gausman? I mean, we'd all given up on this guy, and now his last three outings have been terrific with strikeouts. Salazar. There are guys out there. Like, if you want to drop Price for Kevin Gausman, I might not do that. But Salazar, I think I would. Charlie Morton still interests me. Mike Foltynewicz. These are guys on the most added list. Alex Cobb, I think, should be owned in a lot more leagues than he's owned in.
Right.
And then, you know, with Tanaka, I think every time we have a show and Tanaka pitches, you know,
if
last
like,
outing was 14 whiffs.
I can declare to all of our listeners the weeks in which I do have Tanaka active, because I've literally started him in all of the incorrect weeks. So if you'd like, I can tell you.
I don't know. Like, there's no rhyme or reason to this, Tristan. And you watch him more closely than I do because he's a Yankee. But, like, his next outing is against Detroit. I think you use him there.
Right, and I did, so he's going to probably get obliterated because that's how the I really feel like that's how the season's. I know, Eric, you've had this happen to pitchers like of your own too. You have to have had this happen.
Yeah, of course. And
you've got to start. Look, the Tigers are much better against left-handed pitching than right-handed pitching. You got to play them.
I think you got to play. And, you know, I think Tanaka is the kind of guy that's either going to win or lose your leagues, and I'm willing to take that chance. I have a team or two where I really need help in strikeouts and ERA and WHIP. And I took the chance of Tanaka, either traded for him or bid on him, because I thought, well, what do I have to lose? Yes, I could fall in the standings because he'd get pounded a few times, but 14 strikeouts, only one run. Of course, it came on a homer. Like, I think he's a must-own in case he goes on a two-month stretch here and Chris Medlin's it and is awesome. So, other injuries here that we need to discuss. Boy, rank these guys in terms of who would you like to keep owning in an ESPN standard 10-teamer. And I'll do it in alphabetical order so I don't get prejudice. Mitch Haniger, Chris Owings, Troy Tulowitzki. Rank them, please.
In terms of kept own...
It's not fun there, huh?
No, it's not. I will go Owings, Tulowitzki, Haniger.
How can you go Tulowitzki over Haniger? Now, I'm not saying that he's the same
guy
he was
in April. There's nothing there. Absolutely nothing
there. I don't think there's anything there. First of all, why would Toronto even bring Tulowitzki back at this point?
I've cut Tulowitzki in a league that's a little bit deeper than this one. So in the 10-team leagues, I'm obviously on board with him going to Owings. Frankly, I would let Owings go if I absolutely needed to have the roster spot.
He hasn't played very well over the past 2 months. I think Haniger's still the guy. I mean, what he showed in April was obviously not the real Haniger, but what he showed the last 6 weeks isn't either. Maybe he's playing through injury. He got hit in the face with a pitch ball. I think it was Jacob DeGrom. Really, none of these guys should be owned right now in a 10-team standard league, so
nope.
Move on.
I'm worried that Haniger doesn't have an awful lot to contribute the rest of the year. I am.
I am, too.
And that goes to my AL-only league where I was thinking about replacement.
Yeah, I would have to agree with everything you just said there. You know, and I was really excited about Haniger before the season, and then in April we looked smart, and now we don't look as smart because he hasn't done anything for a couple months here. 7-day player, I always like to do this on Mondays and just take a look. Can you name the number one player? He's a rookie. In fact, two of the top three players on the Raider in the last 7 days are rookie outfielders.
Rookie outfielders?
One of them I predicted was going to win Rookie of the Year, so you should get that one right.
Manuel Margot, yes. At a combo meal.
Not going to. Oh, we should do that. I haven't heard that sound in a while.
Hey, it's a combo meal. Combo, combo. It's a combo meal. Home run plus steal.
So, yeah, obviously Margot is not going to win Rookie of the Year. It's going to be Cody Bellinger there, and good for him. But Margot has had a really nice week. Three homers, a couple steals. Let's do our combo meals here. On Sunday, there was one. It was Eduardo Escobar, the Twins, and good for Eduardo. But
he's not as bad as people make him out to be.
Lefties.
AL onlys.
He hits lefties.
Yeah.
I'm really disappointed in Jorge Polanco. He was one of my deep sleepers, and I thought there was something there, but there clearly isn't. On Saturday, Steven Souza Jr. had another one. I think that's not his first of the year, Margot, too. Would you rather own between Souza and Margot?
Because Margot's had the injuries. I have no right to say that he's the safer pick of the two. I will go with Margot, though. I feel like there's more stability in batting average.
I agree, and I don't see any combo meals from Friday. So the number one player of the past week is actually Bradley Zimmer of Cleveland. Who
I should have known that.
The leadoff hitter against righties.
The pest.
He had two home runs. He had a home run Monday and Tuesday, stole three bases for the week. Mm-hmm. Still feels like a guy who he's batting .279 right now, could hit .220 the rest of the year. So with a strikeout proclivity. So just be careful with Bradley Zimmer. I mean,
but
today against Fisher,
helps.
You want him. Leading off against righties helps. And the fact that Francona moves him to last against lefties helps too. Because
yes.
He can't hit them. Mm-hmm. Christian Yelich was number two for the week. Eric Hosmer, J.D. Martinez, Andrew McCutchen, three home runs. Man,
yeah.
What are we talking about? He is the Brian Dozier of this year, right?
That's a bit of a stretch.
Well,
Dozier
he's not
going to
hit 40 homers in a half a season, but in terms of fantasy owners pronouncing a player pretty much done, like we did with Dozier last May, we did that with McCutchen this May. And
not
look
done.
Now.
No, we didn't declare him done. We just didn't feel that he would do this.
I don't think we thought he was going to do anything like this, Tristan. He was terrible last year, McCutchen was, and he was terrible for the first 2 months, and he was whining about which outfield spot he was playing, and he was on the trade block, and may still be. He's on his way to, like, perhaps 30 home runs and batting .300. Nobody thought this was going to happen.
Yeah, well,
you thought
yeah,
this was going to happen?
Yeah, okay. So
I did a little extreme.
I did this since June 1st to try and put it into the Brian Dozier context, 367, 470, 678. No, absolutely nobody, even McCutchen's biggest fans, didn't see this coming.
You know what I see coming? Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person. And SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. We've all here at the Fantasy Focus got the SeatGeek app on our phones. It's by far the easiest way we've found to shop for tickets. We can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, instantly find seats. In fact, my friend Tristan just used SeatGeek to buy tickets to a baseball game, and we had a lot of fun there. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, listeners to this fine show get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code Frank Barney FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
So do you know who's actually on pace to be a potential Dozier?
I mean, hitting a ton of home runs that we didn't... There's nobody...
Almost unquestionably dropped across the board around Memorial Day, and since then has a pace like Dozier's. 15 homers and a .930 OPS.
Somebody that was dropped?
Dropped. Without question. In ESPN leagues, would without question have been dropped.
Napoli?
No. Same division, though.
Not Odor. He wasn't dropped.
No, Odor does have good numbers, but that's not quite up there in terms of the OPS. This guy's been remarkably good at a terrible position.
Okay.
Terrible position. Probably ahead of any of the catchers we just mentioned at this point.
A catcher?
Yes.
See, but that doesn't... No catcher can do that.
Oh, this
Evan Gattis?
15 homers and a .930 OPS. Anyone know?
15 homers since Memorial Day.
Since June 1st.
Zunino. Yeah, but see, Zunino can't possibly be like Dozier.
It's a pace like Dozier's. I mean, it's not quite up to that level, but that's right. the drop guy who's putting up numbers that are getting close to that.
He was in
crazy.
The minors. That's a little different. I mean, Dozier was like a fifth-round pick who was dropped. Most fantasy owners will never drop a fifth-round pick unless he's on the disabled list for months. So to drop Brian Dozier last May, that took a lot, you know, because of who he was and the numbers he'd put up in the past. And he wasn't even owned. But, I mean, I see what you're saying. That's a guy who's he's probably been a top 10 catcher. Definitely not Span, right?
He probably has been for the year at this point.
You think I don't think Zanino's been a top 10 catcher for the year.
Catcher's been
awful. He's number 14. Catcher has been awful. Number one catcher for the year, by the way, is Sal Perez.
Yeah,
then Real Muto and Posey. Then Contreras and Gary Sanchez, and then the drop-off.
Are you surprised by Sal Perez's batting average?
I am.
He's sold out for power. I'm surprised, too.
289 is awfully high for him. And, you know, he's still playing way too much for a catcher. So I fear the second half drop in batting average like every year for this guy. But, I mean, I was a little bit like you and I made a catcher challenge trade a couple years ago in a sim league, and I clearly lost that deal. And Sal Perez is hitting for more power, and now he's hitting 289. He's ahead of Posey, which is kind of hard to believe.
If it's the guy I think it is, I really need him back in NL tout.
Manny Pena is number 11 for the season. Tyler Flowers is the number 9 catcher for the season,
yep.
Owned in 18% of leagues. And Manny Pena is owned in 9%. So, like, if you need catcher help, you're just looking at the wrong places, people. I mean,
number 15 tells you all you need to know about catchers.
Austin Barnes. Wow. You know Kurt Suzuki?
Yeah.
He has 11 home runs, and he's done it, like, in 8 different innings in this season, I heard on the broadcast yesterday. Kurt Suzuki.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, like, he's having a better year than, like, Russell Martin and, like, a lot of catchers who were drafted in ESPN. We're just wasting time. Kyle, what do you got?
Well, just to build on that, if you want some numbers behind Perez, 230 better in the second half of the last 3 years. So there's something to be said for him playing every day.
Yeah, I mean, I've had him in leagues, and so has Tristan, and I'm well aware he has not been a very good second-half player.
I don't get how he plays so many games. How do you do that? How does a human body hold up to do that?
It's like us doing the show every day, Kyle.
Something
you know?
Like that.
You know, we are durable. Yep. We are like Cal
Ripken. Every day. Every day.
Every single. We never, ever miss a show.
Oh, no, never. Never.
Except for when I go on vacation and the world changes.
What's a
changes.
Vacation? Never heard of it.
I followed Twitter, so I found out what was happening.
You were basically working. Though.
And by the way, we should note, fantasy football season is here, folks, and on behalf of ESPN, we are all here to make sure you know the difference between bad fantasy and good fantasy. Bad fantasy is drafting a kicker or a defense too soon. Good fantasy is going into the season with the best tools and analysis you need to draft the best team. Bad fantasy is leaving your best player in the starting lineup when he has a bye week. Good fantasy is having alerts from the fantasy app and Matthew Berry as your personal consultant. So play the number one fantasy football game on the number one fantasy app because good fantasy is better than bad fantasy. ESPN Fantasy Football, sign up now at ESPN.com/goodfantasy. And we should note that our friends at the Fantasy Football Focus show are going daily today. Is that right, Kyle?
That's
daily,
right.
Every day, Monday through Friday. The whole gang is there, including Kyle.
Oh, yeah, and they're already published today, so we're up and rolling.
Wow,
I have no idea what sport they're talking about on the show, but I hear it's great.
It's an oblong ball. You know, guys hit each other. That's like a good thing. You should check
it out.
You
can't play a sport with an oblong ball? That's impossible.
You can't roll the ball. You throw the ball, Tristan.
Well, technically, you could roll the ball. I hear there's fumbles. Oh, yes. Wait. Oh. I can't admit I know about this.
It's a goofy-looking thing, but what do you guys say we get to some baseball questions?
We still have a baseball show, yes. So let's hear some questions, yes.
All right. Sid notes that Nunez batting second for the Bo Sox at 5 hits in his first series. For his career, he averages about 12 steals every 60 games. He wants to know the over-under you have the rest of the way. 12 steals and a 280 batting average.
I am watching Boston's lineup the next week because this is a big deal. Eduardo Nunez, nobody seems to like him in real life. But in fantasy, he's a good player. Got some pop, can steal bases, and he's been batting second. But he's been doing that because Dustin Pedroia hasn't played all weekend. So I ask you, Tristan, I mean, they can't really sit Rafael Devers. He's got 2 homers in his first 5 games at third base. Is Nunez going to lose playing time here? Can you make the case, like, if I said rank Pedroia, Nunez, and Devers the rest of the season, I think you have to go in that order. But are you sure Nunez is playing more than Devers?
I'm not, and I'm really tempted to put Nunez at the bottom of that list, and the only reason I won't is the stolen bases, which are of supreme importance, especially in AL-only leagues. And Eric, I don't know if you've noticed about Boston. Like, they're not that aggressive on the base paths, but they're very efficient this year. They got a pretty good stolen base success rate last I had checked.
They do, and you know what I think might happen here is Mitch Moreland could lose playing time because he's been terrible in the second half of the season, and they could, in theory, play Hanley there. They could play Nunez there, I guess. So I like Nunez more than I probably should, but his numbers weren't that. Like, he could steal 25-plus bases, maybe 30. And if he keeps batting second, you know, and Devers keeps batting eighth or ninth,
Find room. They'll definitely find room for him, I think. They're going to probably use him the way he always should have been, and I think that as you said, in that lineup spot, that's going to help with the counting numbers. Okay. I like it. I thought he was one of the best pickups in FAB in AL-only leagues coming into yesterday.
Man, I have not had luck in FAB. So I don't know if you know this, but I have a shot in NL Labor. Mm-hmm. Me and Steve Gardner are up there along with Colton and Wolf, and I was outbid on Jose Quintana. Because there was a team that had more than $100 because they were able to, you know, trade in injured players, which I can't stand, unless it helps you, I guess. And then I missed out on J.D. Martinez for the same reason, and there was nobody to bid on today. So I got a $1 Brandon Morrow. So, you know, I'm still waiting. If something happened, like if Darvish and Sonny Gray get traded but stay in the American League.
What do you have left?
I have $90.
Well,
of my 100.
You got Lucroy.
I don't think I want Lucroy.
But you're going to have to, I mean... You can't let him go with 90 if you're sitting on that. I mean,
no, I want to see what happens, but like,
and I are in the same exact spot.
My catchers aren't a problem.
I fell in the same spot as you, and I missed out on the first two, and I'm looking at Lucroy, and then another guy traded for Fab in order to take control of the board. So, might be the same thing. You got to spend.
I'm hoping that Sonny Gray comes over, and then I'll, you know, or Darvish to the Dodgers. Basically, whoever the Dodgers get. I need a pitcher more than I need a hitter. My offense is fine. I don't really have any room. I guess, you know, yes, I could use LaCroix. But anyway, what do you got, Kyle?
Alrighty. Jacob Freeh has been capped at right around 150 innings each of the last 2 years, currently at 120. Eric wants to know if you're worried about an innings cap, and if so, what's the number?
I have not heard an innings cap with Freeh. Have you, Tristan? And also, they're in the wild card race, so... And they're in the division race, I'm sorry. I mean, they can win that division. So I don't see Freeh being handled carefully unless they fall out of it by September 1st.
Yeah, I think that would come down to playoff preparation because you can give him the 30 innings that he has to catch up with last year's number. You can probably go 30 innings beyond that. If that's 60, that's probably going to be enough to get you through the regular season anyway, and maybe he just misses a start in September, depending on how they are in the competitive race. I wouldn't plan around Freeh being skipped that much, if at all.
I agree. And I really like him, and I'm mad I missed out on the bidding on him in one of my leagues, and I can't get him in a trade now. But he looks like a guy who I don't think we're going to be ranking him as a top 20 starting pitcher next year, but I bet he's in that 20 to 30 range, which is really, really valuable. Don't you think if Freeh could be ranked like 25th next year? Or is that too generous?
It's only generous because of his fly ball nature. I mean, there's a little risk involved here in ERA just because he gets the ball in the air a little bit too much. But at least he's in the right park for it. I'd say like 40 is the line we're going to draw. We'll see how the rest of the year plays out.
Okay.
Eric, I'm thinking you put him at 24. He turned 24 yesterday, so he had a birthday.
That's a great number.
Yeah, what I'm thinking. All right. Mr. A has to cut one of these fringe relievers. Wants to know who you're least confident in getting saves the rest of the way. We've got Doolittle, Madsen, Reed, who I guess is the answer to this question now.
Yeah.
Or Rosenthal.
Rosenthal is clearly St. Louis's closer. And I'd be surprised if they trade today. Like St. Louis, they're under 500, yes, but they're only 4.5 games out of first. So, I mean, I've heard rumblings that the Cardinals are sellers, but I really don't think that's going to happen. Oh, Addison Reed's the obvious answer here. But, I mean, if he hadn't been dealt already, I might have said Madsen, because I really think Doolittle is clearly the Washington closer, and Madsen's clearly the setup guy. Do you disagree with that?
No, I've got the exact same order here when we're talking just saves, but I think in terms of the overall value plus the possibility of any saves, I think Madsen's less attractive than Reed.
How? Reed's not going to get anywhere near saves in Boston, and Madsen could. I mean, Doolittle has a massive injury history. You know, if there's a ninth inning where it's three right-handed batters, I mean, Dusty could go to Madsen. I don't see how you can make that case.
If it's just saves, yes, I'd be keeping Madsen. I just don't think he's that great a pitcher. I don't think he's going to contribute you anything when he's not closing, so why lock in the roster spot.
Okay.
Alrighty. Frankie is in a points league, and he wants to know who has the highest ceiling among these three pitchers. He's got John Gray, who has three of his next four starts at Coors, Kenta Maeda, who has a 1.8 ERA over his last three, or Kyle Hendricks, who's only given up two earned runs in 9.1 innings since returning.
Highest ceiling?
Well, the ceiling is Gray, but he's also the floor because of Coors. You know what? I don't want to mess with that anymore. There was a while this season where I was in on a couple Colorado pitchers. Hoffman looked good. Gray last year with the many strikeouts. I'm backing away. I am. And Kyle Hendricks doesn't have any upside. I guess the upside would be what he did last year in theory. But I don't want to deal with Colorado starting pitchers. I just, you know, I'm really going out of my way now to avoid that. So I would say Hendricks would be the guy for me.
I'm with you on that. I'd have Maeda second.
And I would too, because whatever the Dodgers are doing here, I don't think it's going to change anytime soon. Like, that's a team that's going to win more than 100 games, and they're adding bullpen parts probably. It's a good team, good defense. Maeda does not go very deep into games, but he doesn't have to on that team. So, but still, like, he's already at 9 wins and 16 starts with almost a strikeout per inning.
Maeda's issue is that if Darvish or Sonny Gray did come over today, then Maeda's experience in the bullpen already this season could be tempting to the Dodgers to bump him back there.
He only pitched twice in relief this year. But yes,
but
I
who
see
are they bumping?
Saying.
They're not bumping Alex Wood. That's not going to happen.
Well, no, but they are probably. What they're probably going to do, because they've got this Division One, is just not rush Kershaw back, and Alex Wood will get a break at some point so he's ready for the postseason. Same with Rich Hill. I mean, do you think that Alex Wood and Rich Hill aren't missing starts the rest of the year? Of course they are.
I think they will with that 10-day DL thing that they manipulate.
Yeah, I mean,
there,
plus who's their five right now? Brock Stewart?
Today it is, yeah, but if Brandon McCarthy comes back from the blisters, he'd take over it.
Well, I bet they're trading for a right-hander, and
No Dodger is going to make every turn of the rotation the rest of the year.
No,
I
agree with that.
So I guess in a way we should reconsider Gray versus Maeda. I like Gray a lot, but Eric, you're right. It's going to be tough with those Coors games. I just can't get past that.
I mean, he has two home starts this week. I don't want any. I mean, even against, you know, nothing offenses. I don't know.
I also believe they had a couple of tricky road series. They might have had one of the ones in Milwaukee and another in a hitter's park, and it's not like they've already gotten a lot of their Coors games out of the way. The schedule wasn't outrageously good for the Rockies.
You know what? I don't even care about the schedule, to be honest with you. I know that sounds silly from an analyst, but, like, it doesn't matter to me. And he still has to pitch a Coors sometimes, and he hasn't done what he did last year. So I feel like last year is a little bit aberrant, and I don't want to deal with it. And I don't want to – you know, I understand the difference on the road, the Tyler Chatwood outings on the road. That's different. That we're talking streamers. Home, no way.
But you'd still use them, say, against Giants, Padres. That's why I'm thinking.
At home,
I don't know.
I'd
use them in those two, but I can't make promises beyond them.
Manuel Margot is going to have a big couple final 2 months.
Padres have a lot of Ks in that offense, though.
The music stopped, which means it's time for us to take a look at the schedule. A game has already started. Hope you enjoyed. Hope the Phillies win. We have a game on ESPN tonight. It's the Clevelands at the Bostons. Mike Clevenger and Doug Fister. Fister's already given up 3 runs, and the game doesn't start for 7 hours. Clevenger's a guy I like, and I think we need to, but still a lot of walks. And against Boston, I don't recommend him. But is Clevenger a guy who next year breaks out and we say, all right, there's something here? Like, Clevenger looks like he could be, in time, a guy who strikes out 180-plus hitters. And that would be intriguing, mm-hmm. right? Especially since right now he's barely owned. So if you're in a dynasty league, you might want to pick him up. I don't want to use him today, but, like, there's a future. Like, Clevenger, to me, these final 2 months is going to take a turn. Either he gets into our top 50 next year, or we just forget about him. You don't agree with that?
Well, no. I do think, yeah, it's going to be an important year for him. But I have the same issue with him that I have with Faria, that it's a little bit too fly ball oriented. I mean, for a guy who walks, as you said, the rate he does, that's a problem.
Major problem.
Yeah.
Other outings say, ooh, like this one, Michael Former, Luis Severino, that's a good one there. You know, and again, it doesn't really matter that much in fantasy, but in DFS it will. I haven't seen where Baltimore is slotting in their new right-hander, Jeremy Hellickson. It could be today for Ubaldo Jimenez. Now, if you're playing DFS, you want to pick up Royals because Ubaldo is scheduled.
Right.
Well, you would do it anyway against Hellickson.
They're not doing Hellickson. He's throwing a bullpen today.
Okay.
They're possibly going to slot him in Wednesday if it all goes well.
So I have him in NL labor. Would you just drop him?
Hellickson?
Yeah. Would you just outright cut him for a middle reliever? Then go through dealing with him for 2 months. I need ERA and WHIP.
Yeah, if you need to do that and there's a good guy to preserve them, then I would let Hellickson go.
Well, there isn't. I mean, I tried today. I bid on Field Yates and Phil Maton, and I ended up with Brandon Morrow.
He's thinking football.
That is a quality pickup as of today.
It's mock draft Monday. Don't forget. I'm drafting Field Yates. So I ended up with Brandon Morrow, who's got really nice numbers, but I put him in for Tim Edelman. But, like, this week I'm going to pick up another middle reliever and just cut Hellickson. I don't want to deal with the Hellickson experience the final 8 weeks. We're wasting time. All right, Charlie Morton's a decent option today against Tampa, although Cobb against Houston is tough because of Houston, right? Cobb's pitched really well of late.
Yeah, and the one reminder I'll throw here is that we did watch Aaron Nola do very well against this Houston offense, so it's not a total avoid matchup.
They're missing key parts, you know? I mean, Springer's not there.
Yeah, you know what it is? If you've got a cap on inning starts, that's when I'm avoiding ones like this. Otherwise, he's a go.
Load up against Felix Hernandez. That ERA does not match what's really happening, just like last year. Texas, even without LaCroix, I think they're going to be able to overcome this against King Felix. I like Gio Gonzalez today as well, having a nice year. He's already pitched well against Miami.
Good matchup.
And he hit. All right, let's do pitchers for the next couple of days, and then we'll all name a couple hitters here because we're trying out something new. Tuesday, all night games, so you can wait all day to do your DFS lineups here. Yolise Chacin and Jose Berríos. Berríos has not pitched well of late. Chacin's had a better year than people realize.
And where's he pitching?
It's at home again and in San Diego against the mighty Twins. So,
yep.
You know, I think that's kind of interesting. Like Chacin, from a cheap DFS perspective, I think there's value there to be had. And, you know, Berríos at San Diego, obviously I would not recommend him. But, like, if he's struggling now, I'm starting to worry. So just something to keep in mind there. That's all.
Aaron Nola could come up with another good outing in L.A.
Nola at the Angels, not the Dodgers. Important distinction there. Erasmo Ramirez starting for Seattle for the first time at Texas. Anything to watch here in a deeper league or, you know, a deep mix or an AL only?
I want to get a read on the pitch count. I also want to see pitch efficiency with those. It would be very good if he could get up to somewhere in the range of 75 and get through five innings with that. If he does that in Texas, that'll bode very well for streaming.
And it's going to be an interesting DFS day because both Chris Sale and Max Scherzer are on the mound, and you probably won't be able to afford both. And Chris Archer's pitching. So there's some big Yu Darvish, who knows where he's pitching. Carrasco. So it's like an ace day.
Yeah.
What do you like to do in DFS on ace day? Do you like to take one of the aces like Scherzer and Sale and then buoy him with like a cheaper guy like Chacin? Do you like to have two aces, no aces? What do you like to do on days like that?
I typically do like to use the one and then a cheaper option. I will occasionally use the two if I find that there are enough weaker arms here that I can exploit. So, for example, I might look to the Anibal Sanchez, Homer Bailey games where they're both on the road, load up against them, maybe load up against Chris O'Grady, Pelfrey would be another one. I might try and take a couple of cheap options. But I tend to find that unless I get two elite bats, it's not going to work. So it's one starter, one cheap guy.
On Wednesday night, oh, I know where Kyle the Monster will be at 7 p.m. He'll be watching Rick Porcello versus Trevor Bauer on ESPN Wednesday night baseball. How about that?
I'm a company man.
You should be. There are day games on Wednesday, so please be careful. Tanaka, by the way, Tanaka's day-night splits here. Have you noticed them? Has anybody noticed them?
Actually, honestly, I have not noticed that. Give us those.
Well, there's something there.
I should have.
Well, I don't want to say something's there. Let me ask you before I tell you the numbers, okay? Yep. And Kyle's feverishly looking at them. I am, too. I have them right now.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Have you noticed? Like, I noticed this, okay?
And what's the sample size?
Well, it's small, okay? I mean, obviously it's small.
What's small?
Well,
one or two is small.
This season.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's just this season. But, Kyle, you want to read these?
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at these. He has 1481 day game ERA this year.
How many starts?
1481. I don't care if it's one.
How many starts?
Six starts. So I mean, that's
more than nothing.
Six. It's a small sample, but you cannot dismiss
it. How many innings do you think he's thrown in those six starts?
12.
21.
You're a third of an inning off.
Wow.
So, maybe that's telling, is what I'm telling you. Like, I know it's a small sample size, and people like Law and Sheehan would ridicule me, but That's six outings, Tristan.
And I'm starting him this week.
And I might be able to.
I don't know.
So I ask you both, do you start Tanaka in an afternoon game on Wednesday, knowing what you know now?
Contrarian, yes, start him.
Yeah, I think you do. I'm just looking through these numbers. This is crazy. He's given up more earned runs in day games than he has strikeouts. It's mind-boggling, but he's going against Jordan Zimmerman.
What's the night ERA?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter what he's going against, and it doesn't matter the team. Maybe he's a guy who just for some reason this season can't prepare properly for a day game.
Why did he do it years past?
Night ERA is 3.15, Tristan.
Night ERA is 3.15. You telling me you wouldn't want to have a guy like that with those numbers? That's more than a sample size for night outings.
But the odd part about that is that does that play into the righty-lefty matchups where we talk about the year-to-year variance? I mean, I'd have to look at his career rates.
I'd be surprised if his career rates are anything like this.
But he does have 30 strikeouts in 20.2 innings in day games, so that's a pretty prolific strikeout.
Oh, he's striking everybody out all the time, but he's giving up a million home runs during the day.
Right side of things. I'm giving Tristan some hope that he started him this week.
I hope he does well. I mean, I'm not rooting against anybody.
He had a 2.83 ERA in day games and 11 starts last year.
I know. Like, how do you explain this?
He's been great for 3 years, and then this year, all of a sudden, he's terrible in the day. Is there like blinding mirrors behind home plate?
These
are
human beings.
Situation here?
You know, this maybe something's there. Like, if he gets lit again on Wednesday, we're going to be discussing this on Thursday. Other pitchers to watch, I guess Brock Stewart, you know, deserves watching at Atlanta on Wednesday. I mean, they are a team with Tehran, who's been pounded in home games. They don't have Matt Kemp in the middle of the order. Zach Godley at the Cubs. That's kind of interesting to me. Zach Godley has had a good season. It's against Jake Arrieta. Do you use Zach Godley there?
Yeah, I would. Godley's been very good. I like the control that I've seen from him this year. I think that's the big, big growth point for him.
Would you use Godley or Adam Wainwright coming off the DL at Milwaukee?
I'm not touching Wainwright, especially not in this ballpark.
Would you use Godley or Brent Suter, who's actually pitched really well for Milwaukee against St. Louis?
Godley by far.
All right. Even against the Cubs. All right.
Godley, I know it's a difficult matchup here, but I think Godley has earned our trust on a regular basis, don't you think?
I think he has. Not a top 50 starter, but... interesting.
Not far outside of it.
No. All right. Let's all talk about some hitters we're watching this week. I already mentioned the Red Sox lineup. I want to see what happens with Nunez. I want to see what happens at third base with Devers. I think Mitch Moreland's in some danger here. I'd also like to see the amazing Whit Merrifield, who, by the way, is now owned in 75% of leagues. He looks pretty legit. He's hitting for some pop. You know, he's not like a three-homer guy now. He's like a 15-homer, 20-steal guy. We laughed about Whit Merrifield last year, but look at his numbers leading off. There's something there.
Baltimore series, too. And in Baltimore, that's going to be a nice...
And by the way here, and I'm not saying this just because it's the team that I root for and struggle watching every day, but all three Phillies outfielders are playing well, and they're all available in more than half of ESPN's leagues.
Well,
they are.
Which ones?
Well, the starters. I'm not talking, you know, Nava. Yeah,
nope. Now I need you to name which ones, because it has changed over the past week.
It's not Hyun-Soo Kim. Don't be ridiculous.
He's starting today.
Okay. I'm talking
Which
Aaron,
are you using? I'm on board fully with the Phillies.
I'm going to rank them in order. Odubel Herrera, then Aaron Altair, and then Nick Williams. I don't feel comfortable with Nick Williams being an ad in the ESPN league yet. I think it's nice that he bats third most of the time, but I still think there's some batting average risk there. But, I mean, Odubel Herrera's played really well. He's been more aggressive on the base pass. And Aaron Altair looks like a future, 30-homer guy to me. So I think this is their outfield, and they're all available in ESPN leagues.
It's a great week for them, great schedule.
They're at Coors Field. They get the Angels' awful righties. I mean, come on.
And the DH, so that's going to boost up at bats for those outfielders, which is why I asked you the question. And I would put Altair first of those if I'm playing it just for this week, and I'm with you fully on that rank for the rest of the year.
Do you have any other hitters you'd like to name to watch?
The Chicago White Sox are not good, but they do have a very nice schedule as well this week, and it starts off pretty solidly with the three home games and the hitting-friendly ballpark against Toronto here. Hittable pitchers. I would try and see what else is out there if I'm in a deeper league. Maybe not in the 10-teamers.
I mean, the problem with the White Sox is I think the top of the order now is Lurie Garcia and Yolmer Sanchez. So,
Tyler Saladino, too.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Davidson might hit 30 home runs and knock
that's the one
65
I want
runs. And Moncada, it's too early to say anything about Moncada, but he doesn't look so good. He looks overwhelmed.
He doesn't, and it's a lot of lefties, and that's been his weakness this year, even in the minors, so just be a little careful there. All but right. I do in terms of guys who are readily available if you're in the deeper than standard, those are two teams I wouldn't sleep on.
Kyle, who do you got hitters-wise that you want to watch since I stole your guy?
Yeah, you stole my guy. Can you name all the hitters over the last month that rank higher on the player radar than Merrifield?
If I click around,
in the
I
past
could.
Month,
yeah,
Stanton.
Well, okay, I don't doubt your clicking ability. The John last Carlos Stanton.
I know he's played well. I mean,
Jose Altuve, that's it.
He's been really
he's
good.
He's ahead of Stanton, huh?
He has. Oh, yeah. Okay. I'll go he Brandon Moss. I'll stick with the Royals. I think you're picking apart the Orioles in the series. Brandon Moss, 12 hits in his last 10 games. 6 have gone for extra bases. So I'll go that way because I can't go Merrifield and double down.
And Cardinals too. Harrison Bader is a guy who I want to see. If he hits, he'll keep playing. If he doesn't, they'll push him aside when the injured guys come back. I mean, Tommy Pham has to play. But, like, when they get Grichuk and Piscotty and Meatballs back, like, they're going to have to make some decisions here. Harrison Bader might be something, might be nothing. If you're in, I'll only take a shot and see what happens.
The Cardinals are definitely on the fence today, and I like that you brought that up. Who do you play the rest of the year if you're the Cardinals?
Well, Pham has earned it. And he's batting second.
Yes, definitely.
And it's hard to believe that Paul DeJong is batting third for a major league team. He was in the minors a month ago.
They're like the Rockies. They're playing the hot streaks when constructing a lineup.
If you want to talk about a guy whose batting average could just drop off the face of the earth, Paul DeJong so far is fine, and he's hitting a lot of home runs. He's batting .287, 8 walks, 62 strikeouts, and he walked 4 times over the weekend. So maybe that's changing a little bit, but. Like, this is a little surprising.
He's Josh Rutledge.
Look,
Josh Rutledge had a great first year where he broke through there, and then everybody was on board, and the walks-to-strikeout rate showed regression the following year. That's what I'd worry about with DeJong.
All right, well, our watch has ended for Monday, but thank you so much for listening, and as Kyle noted earlier, we shall return on Thursday. Meanwhile, the award-winning Fantasy Focus Football with all your favorite names is daily starting today, so check that out. I'll be listening to that as soon as this show ends. And today is also Mock Draft Monday, so you can draft with your favorite ESPN football personalities. And by the way, Tristan and I remain, believe it or not, part of that crew, so we will be in the rooms. For Tristan, for Kyle, for Mike Rabaye, I'm Eric. Until Thursday, have an awesome week.
Everything is awesome. Darkness.